Greetings. Welcome to this edition of Falcon Cast. I'm Matt Moore with Jay Adams, managing editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. Hello. As you can see, we've got soccer fever here. Jay's got the scarf
USA.
On.
USA. USA. Hacksaw Jim Duggan. We are good to go.
Absolutely.
With USA.
Yeah, USA every day. It's been a fun World Cup. It's been fun to watch everyone around here get soccer fever, even the players, the coaches. The game's kind of on all over the building in the background while everyone's working. So it's real fun, and we want to wish the best of luck from the Atlanta Falcons, from FalconCast. Go beat Portugal. Let's get to the next round. And then,
Let's
go beat Germany. Let's win this group,
Let's just win the whole shooting match here.
So hashtag see you Sunday, right?
That's see what you we're, Sunday. Hashtag see,
oh, see
you
Sunday.
Sunday.
So, Jay just wanted to, we're going to go through a mailbag in a little bit with some of the Twitter questions we've gotten that we asked for. But real quick, just wanted to get your thoughts. We just wrapped up the final day of mini camp was yesterday. So off-season workouts are officially closed and the players can check out a little bit. And now some of them stay here for a little rehab, but for the most part, everyone has abandoned this building in Flowery Branch. And they are starting their summers and won't be back till training camp.
Yeah, two things. One, it was great to be back out and covering practice and just watching football again. You know, the offseason this year, to me, just really dragged. And I feel like it's a product of, coming off a 4-12 season, but also the draft was later and these different things that go on during the offseason. It just really slowed down for me. Two, I need a break too.
Yeah, right.
And I'm looking forward to that as well. So it's nice that we got a chance to watch some football, see kind of where the team is over the 3 days of the mini camp. But it's going to be also nice to get out of here for a little bit and kind of recharge the batteries before training camp.
Refresh and recharge.
That's
for sure.
It.
I thought, watching the practice, especially mini camp, OTAs too, but mini camp, I thought the pace was good. There was a lot of energy. Seems like there's a healthy, friendly competition going on, and the coaches are really getting behind that.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
And I think if you're a fan and you come out to the training camp sessions that are open to the public, which we just actually released this week, one of the big differences that you're going to notice if you've been out here before is that there is the intensity, and we've used that word for a couple of years now, but there's an intensity in practice that's different this year than I think in previous years. In previous years, you had some very vocal guys out on the field. You had Asante Samuel. You had Thomas Dekou. You had Sean Weatherspoon. Those guys not there anymore. You've got a very different type of intensity. You're not going to hear that boisterous, loud craziness going on. But what you are going to see is very focused players. And the focus is coming from that competition, from the competition that's being bred at a lot of different positions right now. I think the guys are buying into that. And also understanding that, look, I need to fight for my job. I don't care if I've been a starter or if I'm trying to get a starting spot or just trying to make a roster spot. I need to fight for my job. And that's been going on throughout the offseason, but we definitely saw it during minicamp.
Yeah, I was watching the O-line drills, and we'll get to the mailbag, I promise, right after this. But I was watching the O-line drills, and you're watching, so you got, Jake Matthews, Sam Baker kind of start, and then you're like, wow, there's some guys, Lamar Holmes, Peter Kontz, Mike Johnson, guys that have kind of had a starting role at some point in their career, they're kind of backups now fighting to get back up to that starting rotation. And, it's going to be all day, every day competition in the film room, the weight room, and out on the field. And I think that can only be beneficial for this team.
Yeah, I mean, every camp you go into with a number of storylines in your mind, and I feel like this year you've got probably more than you've had in the past. And so certainly that you've got some guys who you're used to seeing in starting spots or in positions of impact who may not be there anymore,
right,
or may, end up being casualties of some of these younger guys that are coming in. So it's a very interesting year right now, and we're already kind of getting a taste of it.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's open up the Twitter mailbag. Maybe super producer Rob Jokes can give us the morning zoo, like,
Can we get some sound effects? That would be good. Let's get a soundboard in here. We got the bat phone over there.
I would love a soundboard.
Commissioner Gordon could call us on the bat phone. There's so many things that we could do.
If you give me a soundboard, I will take this podcast to a morning zoo level, and it may not be good. So
we got a lot of room for activities in here.
All right. Let's thank you, everyone. We got a really nice response on Twitter from everybody, and there were some really good questions. And if we didn't get to them, Jay is really good about answering a lot of things, and I'll try to answer some that didn't get answered on this podcast as well. But let's start with some of these Twitter handles. Geo the hero. Geo the hero, and he puts an O, a zero
it's an edgier Twitter name.
That is a nice edgy Twitter handle. All right, which undrafted player has the best chance to eventually start or have a huge role on the team?
I think you identify a couple of guys and you keep an eye on them during off season and maybe you hope that one of these guys is going to end up making something of himself. And then there's the other category of guys that just come out of absolutely nowhere.
The Paul Warlows.
Okay. I wasn't paying attention to Paul Warlow until Friday Night Lights last year. And so we were already a week and a half into camp and, look what happened there. But for me right now, if you follow me on Twitter, I've been talking about this guy, Bernard Reedy, the wide receiver out of Toledo. He's been running with what you would consider to be the ones. Okay, now look, you can get into ones and twos and all that stuff, but that's not really set. In mini camp, you're not going to see a whole lot of you're going to mix up your personnel groupings a little bit there. But this kid was running with Matt Ryan at quarterback and Harry Douglas opposite him. And so you've got some first team guys there that were on the field as him. I really feel like this kid could be in the race for the number five or number six wide receiver. And I think it's important also to point out that you should expect as a fan that the Falcons will carry six wide receivers this year. You signed Devin Hester in the offseason. You want him involved in the offense. And I think we've seen some of that. We've seen him get a little bit more involved in the offense in OTAs and minicamp. But he's going to be a returner. So he's going to be categorized as a wide receiver, but he's kind of more of a specialist. I would expect that they're going to carry six wide receivers. Smitty said as much the other day here at camp. But just in talking to Mike Smith, he used the word immensely when asked how much Bernard Reedy has helped himself during minicamp. And that's not a light word to throw around. This is a kid who came really out of nowhere. First day of camp, cornerbacks are looking at each other like, who is this guy? Because he's just blazing past them. Now, the second day, the cornerbacks had a little bit more respect for him, and they were able to kind of stay on him, even the safeties as well. But towards the end of practice, he just started burning them again. And so this is a guy, he ran a 4.52 at his pro day. At Toledo, he ran a 4.4 in high school. Very fast kid, all first team max selection at wide receiver, kick returner, and punt returner. So he does a lot of different things for you. I feel like the competition between, I think it's going to be really between him and Darius Johnson, because these are guys out of the same exact mold. Mm-hmm. They look the same height, same weight, same speed. And I think maybe Reedy can do a little bit more for you. So that's my one guy who I think has a good chance right now as things stand.
Also wanted to get your thoughts on tight end, because there's some undrafted guys that have kind of caught your eye as well there.
Yeah, Wisconsin tight end Jacob Pettersson, we didn't talk a whole lot about him during minicamp, but I think you look at him, the whole picture so far in the offseason, this is a guy who had maybe like a fourth or a fifth round grade, depending on who you talk to, ended up being an undrafted guy. The Falcons had him at the Senior Bowl, got a really close look at him there, and just in talking to Smitty during rookie minicamp a few months ago, he liked what he saw out of this kid. I feel like he's a guy to watch simply because of he's just different than your Bear Pascos or your Levine Toy Lolos. Mm-hmm. He's not an undrafted guy, but Mickey Schuler, he was on the practice squad last year. He got a lot of looks during minicamp and OTAs. So tight end is an interesting position. I think Pettersson is in position to kind of make the team at that spot, and we'll kind of watch that storyline as we get into training camp. But he's very different from everybody else on the roster at that spot.
All right, next question. We got Kevin Bamani 7. hopefully pronounce that. Can we get easier names?
Kevin B. Himani, 7.
So, what was the thought behind trading Dent for Yates with the spoon injury taken place earlier?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions about this because there's two schools of thought here. You know, and this happens invariably when you have a move like this. You've got one group of people that's very much for it, and then another group of people that really not sure why the move was made. Here's what I kind of took from this is that the move tells me that this team, in looking at OTAs and their work with the rookies and their work during minicamp, is very comfortable with the linebacking depth that they were able to add in the draft. And you look at Akeem Dent, all right, he wasn't getting first team snaps during OTAs and during minicamp. You've got Paul Warlow, who's pretty firmly entrenched in that inside linebacker spot. When they go to certain sets, Joplo Bartu has been the other inside guy. Dent, no doubt, was a fantastic special teamer. And so, to me, this move just screams of, okay, we've got some guys, some younger guys at the linebacker spot that we really like on special teams. The other thing that it tells me is that, look, we needed some kind of experience in behind Matt Ryan. And when you went into last season and we saw Matt Ryan got hit more times than he's ever been in his career, and luckily he's not made of glass because, you know, Dominique Davis, who was waived this week, he was the only backup. At the time, you had Davis, you had Sean Renfrey, who was on IR. He was the kid you drafted the year before out of Duke. And then Seth Dagey, the undrafted quarterback, he was on your practice squad. Between those three guys, you had 7 pass attempts in an NFL regular season game. Well, now you've got Yates, who has only been in the league 3 years, but he's won a playoff game. He's beaten the Falcons. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who has 5 starts to his credit. So you've got a little bit more experience at that spot in case the absolute unthinkable worst happens to Matt Ryan. I don't think that's going to be the case this year with an upgraded offensive line. However, you've kind of got yourself a little insurance policy now with Yates, who, I mean, you looked at kind of what was going on during the draft, or before the draft leading up to the draft, and you're like, okay, well, if the Texans are going with Clowney, they must feel comfortable with Yates. Obviously, that's not how things turned out, but it wasn't all that far-fetched to think that T.J. Yates could start for the Houston Texans this year. So I think altogether, that's where my thought was, is just there's confidence in these younger guys and what they're seeing out of them during special teams periods. And you needed to add some experience behind Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and one thing on the linebackers, every time we drafted a linebacker, this, you know, the first thing you heard when we analyzed, you know, things written about them was how great they all were on special teams.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, Dent was a great special team player, but they did get some guys that have experience on special
teams. And it's also important to point out, you add a guy, Tim Dobbins, a linebacker, right, who, strangely right enough, also last played at Houston. This guy was a special teams captain for, mm-hmm, for the Texans. So you're not – everybody's trying to put Yates and Dent on a scale. But I think you also have to add – Dobbins on that one side as well, and we're talking about a guy with 8 years of experience who was a special teams captain for an NFL team. I think you end up getting maybe even upgrading at that spot with that move.
All right, E. Stewart 2010, with all the linebackers the team acquired, which one do you see emerging as the leader?
For me, just in watching how these guys are interacting, because you got a young group there, very young group, not a whole lot of experience. Dobbins changes that a little bit, like I said, 8-year player. But Paul Warlow has really taken the reins as a leader. And I think you have to when you're a middle linebacker. You're the guy that's making the identifications, the calls, all that stuff on the field. But off the field, being that guy who's going to answer questions, who's going to let the young guys pick his brain a little bit on different things that he sees, he has truly embraced that role. And I think you can notice a difference in him when he's talking to the media as well. Just seems a little bit more confident, understands the game. You know, this is a guy who, Glenn Pyers, the linebackers coach, I get to talk to him once a year, and I always make sure to talk to him. And I asked him, I said, you know, what are your thoughts on just Paul and how he has progressed this offseason? And he says that he has not come up against a player who has the classroom skills that, that Paul Warlow has, and just the work that he puts in the film room, and the, his understanding of the game in the classroom setting, and his ability to then take that and apply it to the field. Just a lot of high praise for Paul from a linebackers coach who does not hand it out readily.
Right.
And, you know, Glenn's very straight shooter there.
Yeah, I've seen Paul grow up so much since last year, the end of last year, and I think it was such a whirlwind of what happened. And you know, you're undrafted from Delaware, then the next thing you know, you're starting all, yeah, all the games. And you know, rookies do hit that rookie wall, and I think he had a chance to kind of catch his breath. And I've seen him, you know, whether it be in the weight room, he's always here when we see him in the weight room. I don't know this for certain, but I would put money down that I bet he did not miss one weight room session or workout. That's the kind of guy he's already becoming. And when you see him talking, he's always talking about football.
Yeah.
And to his other linebackers, they're analyzing things that they saw in the film room. They're analyzing things that happened in their OTAs, and you can see him being that leader. And he really has grown up. I think the sky is the limit in this second year for him.
Yeah, and the true test for me is when the young guys are out there getting their reps on third team or whatever it might be. When they come off the field, who do they talk to?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going up to Paul. And so that's kind of the thing that stands out to me, is that these young guys are seeking his information and his perspective on things. And I think that can only bode well for the Falcons heading into 2014.
All right, from H Overdosed, really good Twitter handle still.
We got some creative people out there.
Has the Hard Knocks crew changed the atmosphere around the practices, or is it the same old, same old? Go right ahead on that.
Okay.
I can chime in a little
bit. So we held a Hard Knocks press conference this week, and it was interesting to hear a little bit more from you know, owner and chairman Arthur Blank, head coach Mike Smith, and then you had a couple of guys from HBO and from NFL Films who were also talking about just their experience and being around teams and all that. And you know, the word, as soon as this news came out, the word distraction started to get thrown around. And to me, that bothered me, because this, you're talking about professional athletes, mm-hmm. okay? Distractions are a part of life, all right? You play in front of 71,000 people. And this is Arthur Blank actually read off a quote from Dwight Lowry, the new safety, about that. And it was very much in that line of, if you can't handle one camera crew during practice, you're not going to be able to handle fourth and one in front of 70,000 screaming fans. Because it's just not – these guys are around cameras all the time, all the time. And – there's just not going to be situations. And we saw the Hard Knocks guys here during minicamp, and it was like you almost forgot that they were around mm-hmm. at times. And so this is the thing for me, is that I don't believe for one second that this is going to be a distraction for these guys. If you want to talk about the meeting rooms, okay, Hard Knocks, they put robotic cameras up. There's not a film crew actually in the meetings, yep. and you know, being there distracting the guys or anything like that. And one of the things that stood out to me was, I cannot remember his name for the life of me, but the guy from NFL Films, I think he was the production,
mm-hmm.
Ken,
thank you very much, Rob with the assist there. So he was saying that, look, I've done this for 9 years. I have way too much respect for the NFL, for the teams, for the players, for what they go through during that training camp, to be a distraction mm-hmm. to them. And I think you're working with a group of people that NFL Films has been shooting the NFL since 1967. Okay, they've got experience in shooting practices and all these different things. So they know how to do it. I don't see where anything is going to be a distraction for these guys. Ken actually told a story about Vince Lombardi. The first training camp that was ever shot by NFL Films was the Green Bay Packers in 1967, and they went out for that first day of training camp, and Lombardi saw this. I think it was Steve Sable who was packing up his stuff and his film and all that, and he says, Lombardi says to Sable, he says, I want you to come back and shoot tomorrow. And Sable started to explain, I'm sorry, coach, I only brought one day's worth of film. I don't have any more film. And Lombardi's like, I don't care. You doesn't matter that you don't have any film. Come and shoot the practice without any film, because these guys play harder mm-hmm. and practice harder when your cameras are around. And so that's what he did. So Steve Sable, the second day, came, no film in his cameras, and started shooting practice. So
that's awesome.
That's just a one little anecdote from just the experience that NFL Films has.
Right, and I actually was trying to help the NFL Films crew. I was on like a little walkthrough just to make sure they were good and needed, you know, we could tell them where things are. There was a group of us that kind of showed them around the building the other day, and that, you made a great point. Most of the shots are just robotic cams in a guy's office, and they're going to forget they're there. It's not a film guy and a boom mic guy in the office. There are going to be times when those guys are going to be around.
Sure.
But the majority of the shots in all the meeting rooms and all the coach's office and the staff rooms, the O&D staff rooms, there are robotic cameras. And so there's no one else in that room. Now there's the eye in the sky now, but like you said, people, it's going to be business as usual for the coaches and staff.
Is your office going to be bugged?
We can only hope, right? Because there'll be some good entertainment in there. Good content.
Good content.
Good content. Now, so you're right. There is a lot of unfamiliar faces walking around.
Mm-hmm.
I would say more so than the players. It's us that we need to be cognizant that there's a lot of more people around here. Yeah. And there's some of our meeting rooms, some of our boardrooms are going to be taken by these guys. But other than that, I mean, it's business as usual.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, we did the first press huddle after the first day of minicamp with Mike Smith, and because D led, he didn't show up to the Hacks versus Jocks golf tournament. He got penalized his first question. Couldn't ask the first question anymore. So Smitty gave it to me, and I got the Hard Knocks guy behind me with the boom mic, and then the cameras over there. And so he goes, Jay, what do we got? And I'm like, and I just stumbled all over my first question.
We can only
hoping that hits the cutting room floor.
I need to go back and talk to these guys and make sure that clip makes it.
I think I started out with something like, did you get everything accomplished during OTAs that you wanted?
Like, how did everything go out there today?
So, So it affected me. It's a distraction for me because I'm very nervous.
All right, a couple more. We got Kirk Whitmire.
Yes.
He wants to know, who would be your pick for free safety at this point?
For me, the aforementioned Dwight Lowry. This kid is showing out. He really is.
And I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, athletic. And we knew that, and the teams that have had him around knew that about him. The question is, can he stay healthy?
Right.
It's the old healthy issue here. He's got the talent. He's got the speed. He's got the agility. He's got everything else that you want. And I think what I love about him, what I've noticed most about him, is he's just got a nose for the ball. I think he had 4 or 5 interceptions during OTAs. He really showed out again during minicamp. And he's running very confidently with what you would think is the first team defense out there.
Now, what about Desmond Southward?
Now, Southward is you look at this kid, and please, fans, if you come out to training camp, pay attention to number 41, because
I love watching him on special teams.
Yeah.
I don't think there was one time where he didn't get held because he was too fast for everybody.
I think he's going to be a stud on special teams. And Smitty keeps saying, this is a guy that's going to contribute for us this year. And so we'll have to watch that training camp battle. I'm a little bit more confident in knowing that, okay, if Lowry happens to get injured, and we don't want to jinx anyone, knock on glass here, but if that happens, I feel more confident in Southward watching him through OTAs and minicamps now and seeing his athleticism and what he actually brings to the field a little bit more than I was maybe when we drafted him. And so this is a guy who I feel like is going to be a contributor on defense at some point. I don't know if it'll be this year because I really feel like Lowry's got that spot locked down. I'd be good with either one at this point.
100% agree with you. I think Southward has got a little Anton Smith for him on special teams. He's going to be fun to watch getting down the field.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to watch him on that.
Yes.
All right. So we said the best question, and on all these were good. I'm not going to say the best. Well, the question we picked for question of the week in the Twitter mailbag for this week's podcast was going to get the bucket hat, the popular bucket hat. Where can I get these? Listen, I can't find these.
Me, Roddy, and Julio out there making fashion statements during
you guys look good
training camp,
hats.
Right?
I wore mine one day, too. It was good. So, all right. Swami 57, you win the bucket hat. So I hope you watch and then DM us to get your prize.
That's
maybe we'll
it.
Make you watch it and see if you paid attention. Yep. So you win. Your question is Croy Beerman, and he spelled it
the right way.
B-E-R man. And I know you did that on purpose, I think. Seems to be a forgotten man. Is he ready, and could he play at linebacker or even safety? And I was when I read this question, I told you, I said, you cannot wipe the smile off Mike Nolan's face when he comes over to Mark Collins working out with Croy Beerman pre-practice. Because I think Mike Nolan has his prized possession back that he lost early in the year last year. And I think you can just tell how excited Mike Nolan is to have a healthy Croy Beerman back.
Yeah, I think when you look at the way the defense was set up last year, you had Croy Beerman and you had an ocean of possibilities in your playbook, right? And then you lose him, and suddenly you're down to like a kiddie pool of possibilities. And that's not a knock on any player. It
shows what
a product
versatile he is.
Of how versatile Croy is, yeah. And you had Massaquoi trying to do some of the same things, but Croy just is that – he's a unique athlete, and he has a unique skill set that he brings to the table. I think he has been a forgotten man largely because there's been just – some other things going on that we've been paying attention
to.
Other storylines and things like that. Hey, I tell people all the time because I get questions, oh, how does so-and-so look? How does so-and-so look? There's 90 guys out there, and it is very hard to pay attention to any one player. But Croy is a guy who I've been noticing a bit, especially when he's working with Mark Collins, the outside linebackers coach, during special teams practice. And it's important also to point out here that when Keith Armstrong is running his special teams practice at the start of each session, Croy Beerman is not involved. And I think that goes, again, to the earlier question about the linebackers and how confident that this team feels in the new linebackers, the young linebackers, and how much they're going to contribute to special teams. Because now Croy Beerman is not going to be asked to pull double, triple duty playing on some of the big four special teams. And he's going to be saving his strength for defense, and I think that's going to be an important thing to keep an eye on here. So he's getting that side work with Mark Collins, which has been absolutely huge. So he's working with the outside linebackers coach, so of course he's going to be playing some outside linebacker. Mm-hmm. And where I've really noticed him a lot more, and everybody's going to be like, huh, is out in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
When he's out in coverage, picking up the check down receivers coming out of the backfield or out maybe covering a tight end, he's looked really good.
Yeah, it's something he's always been fantastic at. I mean,
yeah.
when they make him drop.
Yeah.
I remember they used to make him and Abraham sometimes drop on some of those
right.
third down plays to change things up, and Croy is fantastic at that.
Yes. And, you know, Swami here mentions even safety, and some of you may chuckle ha-ha at that, but, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. We've seen it before where Croy drops all the way back,
yeah.
and we're talking about 20, 25 yards deep into the defensive backfield. So, sure, I could see him getting way out in coverage like that. This defense is just going to be so fun to watch if everybody stays healthy
yep.
because I think you've got some better pieces than you had in 2012 when you were trying to do like maybe a percentage of this. But now that Nolan's been here for a little while, he's got his guys healthy. He's got some of his type of players. You bring in a Paul Soliai. You bring in a Tyson Jackson. You know, Soliai obviously played with him in Miami and actually went to a Pro Bowl because of him. So I think there's a lot to be said about what Mike Nolan can do, and I think so much of it hinges on Croy Beerman. And so I think we're going to see a little bit more of that this year. Croy, stay healthy, my man. You know, we're rooting for you. And I could see him doing a lot of different things this year.
Yeah, I think he's one of those X factors that he's going to need to stay healthy for sure.
Because,
like you said, there's so many possibilities of what you can do when he's on the field. All right, these were great questions. You guys are the best. You made our jobs easier. We were able to ask some good questions. We didn't have to come up with them. So,
yeah,
really enjoyed the Twitter mailbag.
Keep
I really
doing
did.
Our
we'll,
jobs.
We'll
for
keep
us.
We'll keep doing this, and you know, it was fun, and we'll try to answer as many as we can on Twitter. So, we appreciate the follows and the interactions. So, all right, Jay. So, go USA.
USA.
Go USA.
USA.
All we're asking is give us one goal, right? That's it. We just need a goal. Let's do it. So thank you for tuning in, and have a great weekend and a great week. And we will see you next time on the Atlanta Falcons FalconCast podcast.